This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back. Matt Marchese in for Jeff. He's under the weather. He's been, whatever's been going around seemingly for 2 months now, Jeff is the lucky recipient of that now. Hopefully Jeff will be back in this chair. Well, not this chair specifically, but hopefully he'll be back tomorrow. If not, well, it'll be me again. Lucky for you, Lance. The Tampa Bay Lightning staved off elimination with a 6-3 win against the Panthers on Saturday. And it saw the return to the lineup of a player that, frankly, I did not think that we were going to see the rest of the season. So it's remarkable that he's back. To talk about that and more about this series, Dave Randorf, Tampa Bay Lightning, play-by-play voice. Dave, how are you today?
I'm good, Matt. I'm glad to be on with you, and I hope Jeff's feeling better soon.
Well, like Elliot said, he thinks I planted something on Jeff so that I could get this chair for today. But I mean, I would never do such a thing. I may cut his power in Stouffville, but I would never give him illness. That would be crazy.
That would be pretty nasty indeed.
Yeah. So, you know, we saw Tampa Bay, the 6-3 win against the Panthers. They avoid the sweep. Mikhail Sergachev back in the lineup, plays just over 17 minutes. First game since February 7th. What did you see from Sergachev in game one? Like, there was no hesitation there. That's the one thing that I always am concerned about with a player coming back from an injury like he have is that little bit of hesitation. But didn't look worse for wear in that one. What did you make of Sergachev's return?
Well, it was it provided a couple of things. First of all, you know, you get one of your top defensemen back in the lineup. And listen, they had planned to have him back if they went on, you know, if they kept winning here in the playoffs. We kept hearing they would have to get past the first round. But they were planning to, you know, obviously they want to think towards getting towards at least the first, second, or maybe third round. They want to make as deep a run as they can. And so they were planning to have him back at some point. So he's got to get in there at some stage. The doctors had cleared him, and there was no further, you know, risk of him, you know, damaging the leg any further physically. It was just the mental hurdle. So once that he decided that that was good to go, you get one of your top defensemen back in, but it was also the emotional lift that was provided here for the players in the room and on the bench and in the building. Like, I'm telling you, there's no doubt in my mind that John Cooper, once he knew that the doctors had cleared Sergachev physically, it was just, as he said after game four, he said, it comes from years of experience of knowing your players and knowing that look in the eye is what he said. But, you know, Coop's a very good coach technically, but he's also a very good coach knowing his people and knowing human dynamics and knowing how to push buttons. And he knew that he could get an emotional lift here as well as getting a top player back. And that's exactly what happened. When they announced that he was in the starting lineup, you know how they always announce the starting lineup, and the biggest cheer in the building is always reserved for Vasilevskiy, who's announced last. You couldn't even hear Vasilevskiy's name being announced because they were still roaring because they showed Sergachev up there on the ice when they announced him. And that sent some adrenaline through everybody in that building. And I think the Lightning carried that on into game number one. They scored 3 goals in the first period, got themselves a lead for the first time in this series and carried that out through the entirety of the game. And so you got a couple things there. And you know, most importantly, you get Sergachev back. And I did not see any hesitation. You know, he played, as you pointed out, 17 minutes, 27 shifts, got an assist, a primary assist on a goal by Hagel. And he looks good to go. He'd been skating for the last several weeks with the team, and but there'd been no real heavy resistance. And but we were told that it was just a matter, and Sergei said this himself, it's just a matter of the mental hurdle, trusting it and just going. And that's exactly what he did.
I'm glad you mentioned John Cooper and that the look in the players' eyes, because as we know, this is a Tampa team that, you know, the core guys, they've been here before. Maybe not in this specific situation, but, I mean, well, they have been in this situation. This hasn't gone that way. But, I mean, this is a team that's won Stanley Cups. They've gone to find, like, they've done everything that they can do in this league. And how much of that is just that experience and knowing, like, we're going to take this game by game. Like, we're not looking ahead to if we win this one, we got to get to the next one. Or, you know, whatever the case may be. How much of that experience gives maybe the fan base itself confidence that they're still very much in this down 3-1 and anything can happen in a series because they have those guys that have been there and done that?
Well, this is the end of my fourth season down here is working for the Lightning and calling all their games. And I've been on your show before with Jeff, and I've been on Canadian Radio Hits before. And I try not to sound like the Lightning play-by-play guy, but I'm telling you, it is a very real intangible with this group. That character, that leadership that starts with Hedman and Stamkos and carries on down through the core of Point and Kucherov and Cirelli and Sergachev and Vasilevsky and on and on and on. And even guys that they bring into the picture who've now had some extensive playoff experience. It exists here. I know everybody's up in arms right now in Toronto about how they possibly can lay another, egg in game four on home ice against the Boston Bruins because they can't learn from past experiences. Well, this group has it. And I know that this series, Florida-Tampa Bay, is probably flown a little bit under the radar in your market where you are in Toronto and north of the border because of all the Canadian teams in there. I certainly get that. But people probably thought, oh, they're down 3-0, the Lightning window's closed, and it's kind of over. Yes, they were down 3-0, no question about it. And Florida's good. But those games were close. They were three games decided by a total of 4 goals. They were essentially all one-goal games with an empty netter in game three that bumped it up to 2. And the Lightning pushed back in game 4. And these games have, right now, the goals are 14-13 in favor of Florida. With the one overtime, they're even in the first and second and third period. Right now, the difference is the one overtime goal by Carter Verhaeghe. So the Lightning have been in these games. And to your point, they know until they've lost 4 that they're still in it. They've come back from 3-1 once before in franchise history. Both Hedman and Stamkos were on that team. It was a while ago. It was 2011, but that's mainly because they haven't been down 3-1 very often since then because they've had a decade run of excellence in the postseason with the exception of a sweep in 2019. So Stamkos, for one, is playing his guts out. He's got 5 goals. He's got a goal in every game so far. He's laying hits. He's winning faceoffs. He's blocking shots. I don't know if you saw in game number 3 where he actually, with an empty net, he actually took the road hockey goalie position. Yep. And blocked a shot and kept the game alive. He's playing his heart out. And that's not hyperbole. He's been their best player up and down the ice, and not just with the goals. Hedman is logging 26 minutes a night. So that's where the standard is set with those two guys. And it's what you asked about is it exists with this team. And until the Panthers knock them out, it's not over.
Dave Randorf, Lightning play-by-play voice, joining Matt Marchese here on the Jeff Merrick Show. So I did want to talk about Stamkos because he's enjoying the best start to a playoff that he's ever had, and he's in year 16. I know we talked a lot about the contract prior to the season. I know we've made, that is still part of the situation, but this does not look like a guy who is worried about it. He's going to get paid, whether it be in Tampa or somewhere else. He's going to get paid. He was one of the best goal scorers down the stretch. He was absolutely incredible. Reaches the 40-goal plateau again. And like I said, from a playoff perspective, the guy's in year 16 in the NHL, and he's having his best playoff to date statistically. Just speaks to, A, the maturity, but also the no quit in this guy. He's a fantastic player, and he's really proving it in what is a tough series. Let's look at the Florida Panthers. They are a tough out every single night. They play a playoff style in the regular season and in the playoffs. So for him to have 5 goals in the first 4 games of the series really speaks volumes about the level that he's playing at right now.
Yeah, and his second goal, he had 2 goals in game number 4, and his second goal made it 5-3, and they needed that goal. Florida was down 3-0. They came back, and now it's 4-3 in the second period. And to your point, Florida's very good. They're very deep, and they counterpunch. And they'd come back, and they needed that fifth goal, and Stamkos provided it and lit the place up again. It speaks to the character and the leadership, and there's a lot of pros. There's a lot of those character leaders and captains in the history of this game and currently in the league. But, having been around the team now, day in, day out, you see the way this guy goes about his business. He is a pro. At the beginning of the season, everybody knows the story by now. He expressed publicly and directly his disappointment in the fact that his contract was not really talked about last offseason, and then an extension wasn't really, it was very little talk, if any at all. And he flat out said, I'm a little disappointed in that. He's been the captain here for 11 years, owns pretty much every record they have in the books. And he means so much to this franchise and to the community. I've seen that firsthand now as well. And then he put that whole thing to bed. And I always, whenever I'm on a show like this one based out of Toronto or in Canada, I always wonder how this would be a daily question for him in a Canadian hockey market. But it's been kind of left alone in Tampa Bay, allowing him to go about his business and focus on what was another 40-goal season, 80 points, and a tremendous playoff. But it also speaks to him as a pro and being able to just go about his business. Yes, he's going to get paid. And yes, there are fans wondering if the next game, the Lightning play, could be his last as a member of the Lightning. And that's a possibility. I don't want to, you know, be overly dramatic here, but he does not have a contract when the last game is over with the Lightning. It depends on term and price and all that kind of stuff with the salary cap business, but it has not affected him. He's got 21 goals in his last 21 games going back into the regular season. He is leading the way. And again, I can't stress enough how the standard that everybody admires from outside the Tampa Bay market, and how these guys consistently, you know, get it done and make the playoffs and compete and conduct themselves, you know, so well on the ice. It begins with him. And that's the one common thread, and that's why it's so important that they resign him. It really is important. I know guys go other places, but he means a lot to this franchise.
Yeah, it would be very hard for me to imagine Steven Stamkos in another jersey that's not the Tampa Bay Lightning. It's just, you know, one of those, he's been there for, I mean, I guess they kind of did it with Martin Saint-Louis for the longest time, and time had passed, and that's fine. But yeah, Stamkos is, you know, when you think Tampa Bay Lightning, you think Steven Stamkos. Another guy that you think of, and a couple of guys actually, Nikita Kucherov, Victor Hedman, two of the guys that, I mean, Hedman less so, but zero goals in the series. Anthony Duclair, Anthony Cirelli, also with no goals in the series. The only guys that have scored are Stamkos, Hagel, Paul, Point, and Mott. And I know that it's easy to say, well, it's four games old, but the Lightning, they're still in a precarious situation, being one game away from elimination. Does the lack of anybody else scoring, is that a concern? Or do you look at it and say, well, those are the guys that you expect to score? Kucherov may be the one guy in there that hasn't, that you're like, okay, that may be mildly concerning, but he also has six assists. So it's not like he's not getting on the scoreboard either.
Yeah, exactly. I think you hit the nail on the head with Kucherov. He had three assists in the last game. I mean, people take three-point games from him for granted. You know, he had 23 three-point games this season. You know, it was insane, his season. I had a front-row seat for all of it. And all of his three assists in Game 4, a game that they had to have, obviously, were all primary assists. Yes, he was a 40-goal guy, but listen, Florida has thrown a blanket around him for the first three games, and Game 4 was probably his first real impactful game where he was able to create the way he can. I haven't really felt it was like, oh boy, the Lightning can't get goals from up and down their lineup here. Maybe because, you know, it's been hidden a lot just through the consistency of Stamkos. The one thing I will say that was an issue for them was their power play and being given multiple opportunities by a team that just cannot stay out of the box in the Florida Panthers. They were 2-for-12 in the first three games. Then they get two power play goals in Game 4. That was a concern for sure when you talk about goal scoring from anybody, because this was a very good power play. In fact, the number one power play during the regular season. You can't hang your hat on your power play in the playoffs. Nobody can, unless you're the Edmonton Oilers, but you can't really count on it because teams can shut you down, and that's what was happening to the Lightning. 5-on-5 does become important, and again, getting back to your question, yes, you need some more 5-on-5 balance the longer this series goes. And if Florida does manage to stay out of the box tonight, which they haven't to this point in the season, the Lightning are going to need Cirelli to score or somebody else on that list that you mentioned. But it's not like anybody's not getting chances. Bobrovsky's been excellent. Like, he has been really good. And so has Vasilevsky. But as I've said earlier on in this hit, it's been close, man. And both goalies have been good. It's been hard-nosed, tight-checking, competitive games throughout. And I don't necessarily think it's been a huge problem because nobody's been, you know, hasn't been heard from in any way offensively. It's just the goals haven't been going in with the regularity that they do during the regular season, but that's the playoffs.
It sure is. It's been, I agree. It's been a really good series. I think we all expected this. It's, you know, it's the, as you called it, the Sunshine State Showdown. Try and say that five times fast.
Trust me. I rehearsed it before I go on the air so I don't slur all over the place.
Yeah, you definitely have to. But it's been a series that has been, you know, competitive as we expected. It's been nasty. It's been all that it's been advertised for. If anybody's disappointed in this, shame on you, because it's been a good series and it continues tonight. So we'll see what happens and if Tampa Bay can stave off elimination one more time. Dave, thanks so much for taking some time for me today. Really appreciate it.
You got it, Matt. Yeah, I'm looking forward to working this one again tonight. It's been the one series a couple of years ago in 21 was the best series I've ever had the privilege of calling. And this one hasn't had the craziness that one did, but it's been good. And we'll see what we get tonight. Florida's legit too.
Enjoy the game, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt.
There he goes. Dave Randorf, Tampa Bay Lightning play-by-play voice. Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. Of course, we're going to talk about the Lightning and the Panthers. Tampa Bay visiting the Panthers. Panthers -1.5 in this one. Elimination game, as we said, again, for the Panthers as Tampa tries to stave off elimination. I don't think a lot of people thought this series was going to be 3-1 after four games. I think we thought 2-2. I mean, it was 3-0. So I don't think anybody saw that one coming. Dave talked about the power play for Tampa Bay. Florida's penalty kill is great, and it speaks to the job that Paul Maurice has done with this group, along with other things that he's done. But it's been super impressive to really kind of shut down through the first three games a Tampa Bay power play that was the best in the NHL. The way that it moved the puck, the different guys that you have to account for, all of that. Very impressive. Steven Stamkos, 5 goals in 4 games in the series. Start counting those dollar signs for whatever he's going to make this offseason for Florida. Matthew Tkachuk leads away 7 points in the series. He's got 31 points in his last 24 playoff games. The epitome of a playoff performer. You can watch this one on Sportsnet at 7 p.m. Eastern. That was Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. When we come back, David Amber, the NHL on Sportsnet, will join us. Talk goaltending and having a Vezina Trophy winner or candidate and what that means for your playoff chances. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about what's going on in Toronto, the Vancouver Canucks, and of course, David's favorite subject, Alex Ovechkin. All of that when we come back. You're listening and watching the Jeff Merrick Show. Matt Marchese filling in. We'll be back in a few.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Jeff Merrick Show. Matt Marchese filling in for Jeff. Hopefully he'll be back tomorrow. Welcome to hour two of the program. Pleased to be joined on the line by, I'm going to say my friend. I don't want to say Jeff's friend because they're always talking about, you know, David Amber show on Monday. I would never do such a thing. David Amber, NHL and Sportsnet. How are you, buddy?
Hey, we're buddies. Of course we are. I've known you forever, Matty.
I know. It's been a long time, DA. Mm-hmm. It speaks to how I can see the gray hair as I see myself on TV. I can see the gray hair. It speaks to how long I've been in this business for, which is not as long as you, of course, but certainly a long time.
Yeah, I'd do anything to have gray hair. I've got no hair. So
I know. I shouldn't really speak like that. But I will. There is something I did want to talk to you about. So goaltending. My pal Patrick Dumas from our pals out in Calgary, he put this out. So since 1982, only 4 goaltenders have won the Stanley Cup and the Vezina in the same year. Billy Smith in 82, Grant Fuhr in 88, Martin Brodeur in 2003, Tim Thomas in 2011. And the line is, you don't always need the best goalie to win in the postseason. You just need good enough goaltending. And this is not even a shot at Connor Hellebuck or anything. It's more just, you know, only one person can win the Vezina and one team wins the Stanley Cup. I understand that. But it feels like gone are the years where we had Martin Brodeur and Patrick Waugh, Dominic Hasek, Ed Belfour, Curtis Joseph, all cycling every single year. But it's that same group of guys that are all elite pretty much year in and year out, which I guess speaks to the importance of team defense. And it certainly, to me, it doesn't get enough concert in today's game and talking about how important team defense is in front of your goalie.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny, though, because you get Colorado, the highest scoring team in the league, supercharged offense, probable MVP, and Nathan MacKinnon and Makar, you know, Gary Galli and Kevin Bieksa, and everyone was comparing them and Kelly Rudy to Bobby Orr, the next best thing since Bobby Orr on the blue line, versus this, you know, very stout defensive team in the Jets who, you know, tied for the fewest goals allowed. They have, as you say, the very probable Vezina winner in Hellebuyck in net. So you kind of said, okay, well, it's going to be offense versus defense. We all know that old adage, defense wins championships. Well, that old adage kind of goes out the window when you see what Colorado's, you know, able to trot out there and the speed they're able to attack with and the way they're able to attack as a five-man unit. It's been so impressive, right? It's been a stylistic battle for the Jets. And even game one that they won 7-6. It wasn't necessarily the style. I don't think Rick Bonus was going back after game one and saying, woo-hoo, that's how we're going to beat this team. Track meet up and down the ice, and we're going to score 7 goals every night. So, you know, offense is beating defense. And listen, Connor Hellebuck's amazing. This shouldn't take away from his season, but it's been just incredibly impressive what Colorado's been able to do. And you know, it's funny, Steve Fallon, who's a great, like, stats guru for us, gave me a note yesterday. You know, this isn't just a bad run for Hellebuyck and the Jets' defense. This is sort of, over the last decade, as bad as it gets. In Connor Hellebuck's storied career, right, he's a Vezina winner. He's going to maybe win a second one this year. He has never had a four-game span in his career where he's allowed 19 goals, which is what we've seen in the first four games of this series. So this is as bad as it gets for Hellebuyck and the Jets.
Yeah, it's been, like I said, it's felt like a complete dismantling at the hands of the Colorado Islanders. I'm glad you brought up the speed thing, because that's another thing that doesn't get talked about enough, is part of the speed factor with Colorado on their back end is also they have really good puck movers. And when you can move the puck out seamlessly out of your own end, well, guess what? You don't have to defend as much. And I feel like that doesn't get talked enough about with Colorado, because they have that. They have a bunch of guys that are really good puck movers. Like Sam Girard is a great puck mover, but we don't talk about Sam Girard like that. We just, you know, he's always, actually, Sam Girard is always the guy that's going to get traded to free up cap room. That's what Sam Girard was. And that's not the case. But it is funny when you look across the series at which teams are having the most success. Well, it's the teams that are able to get in and out of their zone quickly and efficiently with really good puck movers. And that takes a lot away from your goalie and having to defend all the time.
Chris McFarland deserves a lot of credit. He went out and, kind of like what happened 2 years ago when they won the Stanley Cup, where they tweaked their lineup, he made these little tweaks, and some would say maybe even addition by subtraction. We all know Johansson, there might have been some issues there. So they moved out some players, but he also brought in Sean Walker, right? And that might be the blue chip guy. He fits so perfectly into this system. When you look at Makar and Taves, and you just mentioned Girardi, you know, Sam Girard, they have these puck-moving defensemen. They attack as a five-man unit. They get out of their end very quickly. So whenever the Jets have had pressure in this series, often it's been one and done. If you don't score on your first shot, you're not getting second and third opportunities. The puck's being moved up the ice and into the other team's zone. You're 100% right, Maddie, and that's been a big storyline here. Their defensemen have scored in every game this series. So they're not just defending well and protecting and insulating Georgiev, but they're going up on the attack and making life so difficult as a five-man unit against the Winnipeg Jets. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I don't want to overstate it, because the series isn't over and we haven't seen the Jets play their best game. And I think if the Jets play their best game, they can certainly, you know, beat this Colorado team. But Colorado's effectively not even allowing them to play their best game, and let alone the style of game that they're most comfortable playing. So it's been a real clinic by the Avalanche, specifically in these last three games.
I was saying to Friedge in the last hour, like, the fact that Nathan MacKinnon hasn't had that Nathan MacKinnon signature game. I know he has 7 points in the first four games, but he hasn't had that Nathan MacKinnon game like the one he did against St. Louis a couple of years ago, where you're like, oh boy, like that, where that, there's that seminal moment, that goal where he goes end to end, and you're like, oh boy, like Nathan MacKinnon. He hasn't even had that. They're up 3-1, and that for me feels like, and Freach said it, it's a bad omen for the Jets and the rest of the league if Nathan MacKinnon hasn't had that game yet, because you know it's coming. You just don't know when.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And what's been really nice for Bednar and his coaching staff, they haven't had to overuse Rantanen or MacKinnon. When you look at forwards' ice time throughout this season, the top two forwards as far as time on ice were MacKinnon and Rantanen. You know what? MacKinnon has had a leisurely go of it in the sense they haven't had to overuse him because you've had Lehkonen scoring in every single game. You've had Nichushkin scoring in every single game in this series. It's been a balanced attack. The fact that they've had three games in a row where the result of the game has been out of question by the, you know, by the middle of the second or end of the second period, right? They've beaten Winnipeg by 3 goals, by 4 goals, and by 4 goals the last three games. You haven't had to use MacKinnon. You haven't had to have him steal a game, as you're saying. And that's true. He's been very effective. MacKinnon does have points in every game, but he hasn't had to take over a game because it's been this balanced attack. So you're absolutely right. And when will that bode well? If Colorado defeats Winnipeg and moves on, that's going to bode well for the second and third round, that these guys will be rested and well ready to go. Again, there's a lot of hockey to be played. We're kind of giving the Jets this eulogy. They're not done by any means yet, but it certainly has not trended well, and they're going to have to really come up, as Elliot said in the last hour with you. Adjustments need to be made, whether it's on the penalty kill, certainly 5-on-5. The Jets were the best 5-on-5 team this year. 5-on-5, they haven't been able to dominate or take advantage of that opportunity against the Avs. And you know, they're going to have to make the proper adjustments to have a lot more offensive burst and be able to shelter Hellebuck and not have him under siege. I mean, he played a very solid game in the first period last night. He was under siege for much of that game. The first 10 minutes, it could have been 3-0 Colorado. So when you look at it in those terms, Matt, there's a lot to be figured out from the Winnipeg Jets before they hit the ice tomorrow with their season on the line.
Yeah, that game yesterday, that first period reminded me of game one, because that's what happened in game one. They were under siege and then things settled down and then they just couldn't stop scoring. It's just, unfortunately, Alexander Georgiev has been shockingly the better goalie between the two in the series. Just to continue on the goaltending conversation for just a minute more, I wanted to talk to you about the finalists for the Vezina, which were announced today. Connor Hellebuck, Sergei Bobrovsky, and Thatcher Demko. I mean, We all think Connor Hellebuck is going to win this thing by miles and miles, and that's fine. But looking at Demko and Bobrovsky, when you, like, a year ago, maybe not a year ago, maybe 18 months ago, if I had told you that in that span, Sergei Bobrovsky and Thatcher Demko would be on the Vezina finalist list the following year, I think people would have thought that you and I were both out to lunch. But that's just a testament to both of these guys and the return to greatness that they both had. Like, Thatcher Demko battled injury last year, and part of the reason why he struggled was because of those injuries. And Sergei Bobrovsky was not very good in the regular season last year, to the point that Alex Lyon had to carry this team to get into the playoffs, and then Bobrovsky took over, and we all know what happened. It's just amazing to me that both of these guys in the Vezina conversation, let's say 18 months after, we didn't know if one was going to be healthy enough to play and the other one was going to have any sort of consistency in the league anymore.
It's got to drive GMs nuts, right?
Yes.
You understand why.
And they vote on it, David. That's the best part of all of this, is that they vote on it and they never get it right.
You got to understand why you rarely see Marc-Andre Fleury. You rarely see teams ready to take that, you know, leap, taking a goalie first overall or in the top 5 or 10 picks, because it's such a weird science. You look at a guy like Dominic Hasek, who just couldn't find his form till he was in his late 20s. You look at a guy like Bobrovsky, who had incredible early stages of his career, wins 2 Vezinas, establishes himself as, you know, one of the greatest goalies in the game, and then heads down to Florida, and people are calling his contract at times the worst contract in the NHL, right? And now it looks like a fantastic contract. How many teams would love to have a Sergei Bobrovsky on the roster, right? It's such a funny thing. I think there's such a mental aspect to it. And as you said, Alex Lyon last year carried Florida into the playoffs. Then when he started to sputter, they put Bobrovsky in, you know, trying to keep their season alive, down 3-1 against Boston. And he, you know, we saw one of the greater runs in recent history for a goaltender through the end of that Boston series, taking care of Toronto and then Carolina in quick fashion. And Bobrovsky was a huge part of that, and he's carried that into this year. So it is a great story. And Demko, same thing, all the injuries and everything that's happened with him, for him to have the season he had. So it's when you can find lightning in a bottle, or just, you know, a guy gets his form, you just got to run with it and hope they can carry you to a Stanley Cup championship.
David Amber from NHL on Sportsnet joining Matt Marchese here on the Jeff Merrick Show. I wanted to talk about Brad Marchand, because as much as the storyline in this series has been the inept nature of the Toronto Maple Leafs, their power play, and their ability to create any sort of offense on Boston, Brad Marchand has been the best player in this series. And not because he's been the best player, but he's been the most effective player, certainly, because of he's getting under the other team's skin. He's putting up points. He's producing offensively. And at a time where you would expect Brad Marchand, maybe he takes a step back because he is a little bit older. He does have the added pressure of being the captain of the Boston Bruins. This is, as for me, this is as good of a performance that Brad Marchand has had in the playoffs, period, end of story, in his career.
He's been great, and the picture that, you know, really resonates with me is after the second period of the last game, the Bruins are leaving the ice, and Brad Marchand, and we captured it nicely in our broadcast, Brad Marchand standing at the exit, and he's tapping every guy as they leave the ice at the end of the second period. He's basically saying that one more period, we got these guys, one more period, we got these guys. And he's just, you know, this is why he's a future Hall of Famer, right? Like, he's such a great emotional leader, and he's been doing it for so long. We don't have to think too far back. 2011 Stanley Cup final. He was the one getting under the skin of all the Vancouver Canucks. He was one getting all the headlines and getting in the heads of everyone as a very young player in this league. 2016, he was arguably the best player in the world at that World Cup of Hockey, you know, on a line with Sidney Crosby. He was so effective and so good against the game's best, the big reason why Canada took the gold in that short, you know, preseason tournament. And now here he is 8 years after that, and he's still doing it for the Boston Bruins. He now has a very different role. Bergeron's gone, Chara's gone. He has to be that emotional leader. He has to be that spark plug, and he does it. And he does it as a guy who's completely undersized. He's put that whole notion of, you know, well, he's not big enough to rest. And yeah, he's been incredibly effective. And, you know, in a series where, you know, David Pastrnak hasn't had to take over the series, Charlie McAvoy hasn't had to take over the series, they have him, and he's just this, you know, cool, calm, collected dude. It's so funny, right? Like, even from the very first shift of the series, and he was getting under Domi's skin and taking the shots from Domi, and he plays on that line, Matty, but he finds a way, so far, at least in this postseason, to stay on the right side of that line, doesn't take penalties, draws penalties, gets under everyone's skin, and is also effective. What does he have, 2 game-winning goals in this series now? So it's been incredible to watch. It's been very frustrating for Leaf Nation to watch, but, you know, that's why a team like Boston has success. They've got that emotional leader, and it's been showing, you know, how important that is this time of year.
He is the prime example, and we've talked about him in this vein for a while. He is the prime example of, you hate him on the other team, but you love him on yours. And like, there are a few guys like that. Like, Matthew Tkachuk comes to mind when we talk about that. Brady Tkachuk, of course, we would talk in that same vein. But Brad Marchand is, I just, this level of maturity from him at this stage in his career, because it's not that long ago that we were talking about Brad Marchand not being a liability, because that's not the right word, but he would step over that line a lot, and he's been suspended and he's done all that. Now we're seeing a totally different player who's effective, but also staying on the right side of that line. To me, it's been incredibly impressive. Question about the Toronto Maple Leafs at this point, and the guys brought it up on the broadcast the other day. What do they do in goal here? And this is not a question about the play of Ilya Samsonov. I do think that there have been some goals, like the Frederick goal, you look at it and you go, that's probably one that you would have liked back. But generally speaking, the problem has not been Ilya Samsonov. It's been the play in front of him. But if you are Sheldon Keefe, and he did not name a starter today at practice, if you are Sheldon Keefe, do you look at this situation and say, I need to change something up? Do I change the goaltender? So, David Amber, if you are Sheldon Keefe, are you going with Joseph Woll in game 2? Or game 5, sorry.
Brother. I just think it would be deflecting what the issue is. The issue is their special teams have been abysmal. The issue is they can't score goals. And this has been the repeated problem with the Toronto Maple Leafs and this group collectively. It's certainly the core. You know, you can't finish second in the league behind Colorado in goals for and then put up, you know, 1 and 2 goals every game and expect that's enough. you know, Samsonov has played well enough for them to be in this series. The defense has played well enough for them to be in this series. But when they're one for 14 on the power play or whatever it is now, and they've given up 5 or 6 power play goals, it's not good enough. And when collectively this group who scored at will in the regular season can't muster more than a goal or two a game, that's the problem. I'm not answering your question, but it's just, I think it's inconsequential whether it's Joseph Wall in net or Samsonov in net. You could have Jacques Plante in net. If you're scoring 1 or 2 goals every single game, you're not going to win a playoff series. It's been proven out. So to me, that's the question. You know, what about their power play? What about their balanced scoring? What about the core guys who scored at will? And listen, they've had some horrible timing of luck between Nylander being out with this mysterious illness, and now Austin Matthews didn't practice today and he had to leave in the last game. You know, to have those types of dynamic players not be at 100% this time of year is a really horrible situation for the Leafs. But then the rest of their group collectively, just where has been that scoring that you've come to expect during the regular season, the balance and the depth of their scoring? So that to me is the biggest question. I don't know who's going to be in that next game. I really don't think it matters unless they can address some of those other issues.
Yeah, if 34, 16, and 88 aren't putting up numbers, guess what? You were going to lose this series. It didn't matter who was in net. So I totally agree with you. I have a feeling it's going to be Wall, but I think it's just like you said, it's masking the problem and trying to shake something up that, you know, it's really the only position at this point that you can make a move, because up front, what, you're not really making any moves. Like, you're not bringing in somebody in the lineup that's going to make this grand change that you know, hope to get more goals out of this team. I did want to talk to you about the Canucks, because there is a, it's funny, you know, in the playoffs, weird things happen. You know, the Colton Sissons missing the empty net turns into the Vancouver Canucks winning. Like, what kind of a conversation are we having about the Vancouver Canucks if Colton Sissons scored there comparatively to the one we're having now? Because now it's, look, the Canucks comeback kids. They had such a great last 2 minutes and 30 seconds. You know, yes, they got lucky, but look at the effort they put in, and then they win it in overtime. As opposed to, this team hasn't been able to really distance themselves from the Nashville Predators in this series. And boy, oh boy, they really could use Elias Pettersson right now. That's kind of the way the conversation would be going had Colton Sissons scored that goal yesterday.
It's so funny. I was walking over from our green room where we watch the games to the studio where you see us in studio when Sissons hit the post last night. I actually didn't know about it because I got there and, you know, we have a bunch of monitors, but we don't have monitors in the hallway leading in from one area to the other area. So I didn't know Sissons had hit the post. In reflection, after I found that out, I'm like, good God, that is basically like 2014, the women's Olympic final, right? Yep. The U.S. hit a post from way down in their own end, and that would have been it. Canada wouldn't have won gold had that gone in, and it just completely changed everything. We might look back at this series and go, that was that moment, you know, because had Sissons scored there, Vancouver's not going to come back. It's a 2-2 series lead, and all the storylines, as you say, are where's Pettersson? What's going on with Pettersson? What's going on with his Vancouver offense, right? 12 shots in a win in game 3, and they didn't muster anything for 57 minutes. Last night or yesterday. So it's so funny. This is why sports is the most incredible reality TV, because you just don't know what's going to happen. And that Colton Sissons post really could have been the nail in the coffin for the Predators in this series. However, if I'm Rick Tocchet, Maddie, I'm saying we better have a sense of urgency and we better get our act together, because if they lose game 5 to go back to Nashville, where they were badly outplayed in those two victories, would be a very daunting task, because you could be staring down then a 1-game showdown in game 7. That's how quickly the series can get away from you. If you're the Nashville Predators right now, you're probably going, damn, we should be up 3-1 in this series, not down 3-1 in this series. So I don't think there's going to be a level of overconfidence for the Canucks, but you're 100% right. That Colton Sissons post, 1 inch inside that post and a goal, and it's a completely different storyline today for the Canuck Nation, you know, talking about their team and their prospects of moving forward in this Stanley Cup playoffs.
I just don't think enough credit has been given to the Predators. Honestly, I think so much of the discourse has been Vancouver's not stepping their game up, but I don't think there's been enough credit to Nashville and saying, like, Nashville is you know, they're punching above their weight class right here. They're not supposed to be as talented as the Vancouver Canucks because they're not. When you look at the roster top to bottom, Vancouver is a more talented team. Not a shot at Nashville. It's just the facts. So any notion that, you know, Nashville hasn't done everything they can in this series, I think is foolish. I think Nashville is... They've played this as well as they possibly could have played it outside of 2.5 minutes in the last game.
They've played it well. Let's not lose sight of the fact Vancouver's on their third string goalie here. I'm not sure how many teams run out their third string goalie and still find success. I mean, they've won 3 games of this series with 3 different guys in net. So I do think Vancouver deserves a lot of credit. But to your point, the Nashville game plan has been pretty clear and pretty obvious and pretty effective. Let's run Quinn Hughes. You know, they're dumping the puck deep, and F1, it's not even about retrieving the puck. It's let's punish their defensemen. Let's make Quinn Hughes feel the pain every shift. And that's been effective, even though Quinn Hughes has played through it to his credit, and he's done pretty well. Let's punish Pettersson. I mean, they score a goal yesterday, and they somehow miraculously get their victory goal scrum right around Pettersson, and Lauzon knocks him to the ice. Like, this is definitely part of the game plan, is to physically bully and maybe intimidate some of the skilled and smaller-sized players on the Canucks. And it's worked to perfection. Having said that, the Canucks have found a way to win, and I think they deserve a lot of credit regardless of who's been in net. They found a way to insulate their goalie. They blocked 30 shots in that Game 3 win. They've done everything they've needed to do to pull out the victory. So I think you can have both those storylines. Canucks' resiliency should be one of the storylines, and certainly the Predators, you know, playing an effective brand of hockey and outplaying Vancouver in many time periods in this series, despite the fact they haven't got the victories to show it.
Okay, Alex Ovechkin, I know this is a soft spot for you because you were the first person that put us on to this. Alex Ovechkin breaking Wayne Gretzky's record. And I do think that he's still going to, but, I mean, he's not going to play the Rangers every night next year. But, you know, played 15-26 yesterday. Only 7 times this entire season did he play less than that. None in the playoffs. He looked a little lost out there. He looked like a guy that didn't know what else to do. Held off the score sheet in all 4 games of the series. First time that's ever happened. Did that performance make you think that maybe the goal scoring record is in jeopardy? Because that was, I mean, even earlier in the year when he was going through that goal scoring slump, I think he had 8 in his first, I don't know what it was, 43 or something like that. It wasn't pretty, but you saw it the odd time. It's like, okay, there's a glimpse. I did not see a glimpse. And that may be just because the Rangers are so darn good. But what did you make of Alex Ovechkin in that series and the thought of maybe he's not going to break this record after all?
Yeah, I mean, the Caps were totally overmatched in many respects. The Rangers are a very good team, and Alexander Ovechkin looked, you know, he was a complete non-factor. He was held to, I believe, 5 shots, not a single point. How he performed in the playoffs was, you know, not good at all. And, you know, you heard his coach basically say, Carberry say after the round, you know, maybe he was out of gas because he had that, you know, epic run in the last 6 weeks as the team had to fight tooth and nail in that turtles race that you and Jeff always talk about of trying to get that last playoff spot. They were the last team in and the first team out. And, you know, yeah, Father Time is undefeated, right? And at times, Alexander Ovechkin looks like a 38-year-old, and it's a very young man's game right now, as we know. Having said all that, yeah, it hasn't made me think twice that he's going to ever be the all-time goal-scoring champ. And, you know, part of it is just he's going to stick around to be that guy, whether it takes, you know, if he's 41 behind, whether he does it next year, which would mean he'd have to put together a very, you know, a year that we've never seen from someone his age in the National Hockey League. It would be unprecedented. Or whether it takes 2 years. You know, and even if it were to take 3 years, I don't think he's stopping, you know, 5 goals short of Gretzky. And Ted Leonsis isn't going to cut him off. You know, his contract going to be extended till he does this because it's in the best interest of the team and the fanfare surrounding it. So he's going to set this record, barring him having a career-ending injury, in my opinion. But certainly there's been a number of times, including this playoff series, where the age catches up to you and you notice it, and it's undeniable, as you said, you know, like Father Time. It's just it's a young man's game, and to go out there at 38 and try and carry a team at this time of year, it's a big, you know, ask, a big tall ask And Ovechkin just wasn't up to it against a very good New York team.
Yeah, the Rangers are people. I don't think people. I mean, I think they do realize how good they are, but I don't think they realize how good the Rangers actually are, top to bottom. They're great.
People are kind of, it's funny. People are a little bit sleeping on the top teams in the East, which, you know, people have talked about Florida a lot, but no one's really talking about Carolina, or not as much as you'd think they should. They've been just so good for so long, and they've addressed some of those issues. And no one seems to be talking about the Rangers. And the Rangers, to me, might be that team to come out of the East. They're good. They're deep. Shesterkin looks fantastic right now. You know, they're not relying on Panarin necessarily to carry them. I mean, look at the balance they've had. Trocheck played the most ice of any player on their team. Vinny Trocheck played the most ice time of any player in this series for them. So they're just so good, so balanced, and they're quietly, you know, that series, if they end up playing Carolina, my goodness, that is going to be absolutely fierce, and that's something to look forward to.
That's why sweeping away the Caps and getting a little bit of extra rest is never a bad thing. Tonight, Stars and Golden Knights in Vegas. Can watch this one on Sportsnet at 9:30 Eastern. So Saturday was a great day for Wyatt Johnson to get on the score sheet in the goal scoring column, two including the OT winner. Weird to see Dallas down in this series, but then you look at the other side of the ledger and it's like, well, look at Vegas. Vegas is pretty darn good. They're not your typical second wild card, as we know. How do you look at this series to this point? And do you still, I know it's only 2-1, but do you still think there's light for Dallas here? Because the first two games we were looking at it going, oh boy, like you lose the first two at home and now you got to go back to Vegas or go to Vegas and try and beat the Golden Knights in a barn that has become one of the harder barns to win in the NHL. How do you look at this series to this point and evaluate the Stars through three games?
Well, first of all, home ice doesn't mean anything in
apparently
the playoffs.
Apparently not. Apparently
not. It was the same thing last year. It was really strange. Last year, home teams had a losing record in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and this year that's holding true again. In fact, you know, in that Dallas-Vegas series, the road team has won all three games thus far. In the Vancouver series, the road team has won three of four games. Like it's just a strange situation right now where home ice hasn't meant as much as it had in previous year. Look at the Boston series as well. The road team has won three of the four games. So the series is far from over. I picked Dallas to win the Stanley Cup. Not looking brilliant right now. I know Elliot had picked them to win the cup as well, and I think a few other, you know, people in the hockey community just looked at them as the most complete, balanced team. We haven't really seen Dallas play to the level that we'd expect in this series until that third game where there was a level of desperation there. If it wasn't for Logan Thompson, it could have been 5-0 Dallas. I don't know how much of the game you caught.
Yep.
He was sensational. Dallas was just all over Vegas. So the fact that they won in overtime must have been a huge sigh of relief, because that would have been a total goalie steal of a game for the Vegas Golden Knights had they somehow found a way to win. The series isn't over. Dallas needs to come out with the exact same level of urgency. They shifted up their lines a little bit. And they do have this great complement of good young players, right, in Robertson and Wyatt Johnson, who scored an incredible overtime goal to seal it. For Dallas, and then you have Pavelski and Ben and Sagan and all the vets as well. So I just look at them as a balanced team, a deep team, a very skilled team, and Jake Oettinger at his best is as good as anyone. So if all those things fall into place, you know, we could conceivably be waking up tomorrow morning and seeing Dallas heading back home with home ice advantage, even though it's not an advantage, because by then it'll be four road teams having won in all four games. But it could definitely be a best of three after tonight if Dallas has an equal performance to what they put out there in game three.
Yeah, I said it from the beginning. The team that represents the West will be coming out of this series. To me, those are the two best, most balanced teams in the West right now. And I think that's holding true. I think that's where we're going to end up.
It's honestly, Colorado has been so damn good, and if Georgiev can be solid, he doesn't have to be, just like 2 years ago, they didn't need Kemper and Francois and all those guys to be sensational. They needed to be good. I wasn't really sold on Colorado, but just watching these first four games of their series versus Winnipeg, it's an impressive situation. And let's not sleep on Edmonton too. Like, listen, there's just, I don't know how the West is a
juggernaut. The West is a juggernaut.
It really feels that way. So I'm not willing to put out any. They make us make these predictions, and you feel like an idiot because you get them all wrong. I'm sort of not in the prediction game moving forward, but I'm certainly not going to say the winner of Vegas Dallas is going to represent the West. There's just too many good teams there right now.
I will say I already made a donation to a bunch of friends already with my playoff bracket. So I feel your pain right now, David. Listen, you've taken a lot of time of your day for me. Thank you so much as always, pal. And we'll chat soon.
Yeah, we got game 5 tonight, Florida and Tampa. 7 o'clock Eastern with Kelly Rudy, Luke Gostick, and I. We're excited for that. Another elimination game. I know you just had Dave Randorf on, and we'll see if Tampa can live to see another day. So we look forward for night 10 of the Stanley Cup playoffs. The marathon continues.
And the best part about your night is you don't have to deal with Elliot, David. So there you go. What a bonus. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk soon.
All right, Maddie. Take care.
There he goes. David Amber from the NHL on Sports. And as you mentioned, you can watch him tonight ahead of the Lightning and the Panthers, an elimination game for the Florida Panthers as Tampa Bay tries to stave off elimination. One team that could not stave off elimination, that would be the Washington Capitals at the hands of the New York Rangers. We'll talk about the Rangers when we come back with Vince Mercogliano from USA Today and Sportsnet New York. So the Rangers sweep away the Caps. And to me, I want to know what is the most underreported and underappreciated thing about the New York Rangers. Because we talk about the special teams, we talk about, you know, guys like Vincent Trocheck and Artem Panarin and Mika Zibanejad, Chris Kreider, all of that. But there's got to be something that we're not talking about. We'll ask Vince Mercogliano that when we come back. This is the Jeff Merrick Show. Matt Marchese filling in, watching on Sportsnet 360, listening on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Final block of the Jeff Merrick Show for April the 29th. Matt Marchese filling in for Jeff. Hopefully he'll be back tomorrow. He's a little under the weather. We're sending all of our best wishes, Jeffrey, because that what you have sucks. The cough that doesn't go away. Been there, done that, got that t-shirt. Yesterday, we had a sweep. Thought maybe there was going to be more, but we are not on that train anymore. But it's the Rangers sweeping away the Capitals. And to join us to talk about that and a little bit more, Vince Mercogliano from USA Today and Sportsnet New York. Vince, how are you today?
Good. How's it going, Matt?
I'm good. How's the drive back from Washington so far?
I'm just about halfway. I'm crossing through Delaware, about to get into New Jersey. So we're making some good headway here.
That a boy. Okay, so last night the Rangers win it 4-2. They sweep away the Capitals. And maybe you thought maybe the Caps can steal one because they did play the Rangers pretty decently in the regular season. They did split the season series. But you could look at the scores in each of the games and say, well, it was close for a sweep. And then you look at it and say, no, the Rangers, you know, 5-on-5 was a little close, but special teams, the Rangers absolutely dominated. What are your takeaways from this series against Washington from the Rangers' perspective?
Yeah, I think you pretty fairly hit the nail on the head there. Special teams was definitely the difference in this series. I mean, the penalty kill for the Rangers was just outstanding. I believe they finished 15 for 17, but even beyond that, you just looked at how they were able to shut down the Caps power play, and not only that, but create offense out of the penalty kill. Two of their four game-winning goals were shorthanded, so the way that they were able to pressure at the blue line and create turnovers and turn those into odd man rush chances, that was a standout for them. The power play looked really crisp, really good for the Rangers. That's an excellent sign for them because we know that when they've been at their best in the last few years, the power play has been a huge part of that. I think Igor Shesterkin was very solid. He said he thought he could have played better in the series, but I thought he was very solid for them in that series, and that's a good sign for them as well. I mean, the 5-on-5 reality for this team is what it is. They have not been a great 5-on-5 team in recent years. They've had outstanding goaltending. They've had outstanding special teams. They have some really high-end finishers in guys like Artemi Panarin, Mika Zibanejad, Chris Kreider, Vincent Trocheck is having a great year for them. Adam Fox, one of the best defensemen in the league. So they have this star talent. But overall, at 5-on-5, they are not a team that's generally going to dominate possession, dominate the shot share, dominate the expected goal models. Like, they're usually kind of right in the middle. They've been a little bit better this season with the structure that Peter Laviolette has implemented. I think in talking to some of the players, even Artemi Panarin said it last night, he was like, you know, we were good in this series, but I think we can be better. And that's, I think, a pretty fair assessment. I don't think they were quite clicking on all cylinders, but to be honest, I think what we saw is a Capitals team that, you know, is a great story for them to get to this point. I think they're really well coached with Spencer Carberry, but this is a very flawed roster. I mean, their coach pretty much said they don't have a lot of foot speed and they don't have a lot of scoring. So this is a team that the Rangers should take care of business against, and they did it. They weren't maybe at their 100% best at 5-on-5, but they still pretty decisively won each of those games. Even though the scores were close in a lot of situations, it always felt like they were in control. I think there was only about 3 or 4 minutes in the whole series where they did not have a lead, or I'm saying were trailing. So overall, I think, you know, you got to feel good about a sweep, obviously. And I think a lot of the pieces that are going to be important for the Rangers on this playoff run, specifically special teams, Igor, and I thought their center play, with Mika Zibanejad putting up 7 points in the 4 games, Vincent Trocheck having a really good series, I thought those were all encouraging signs.
Yeah, it really was. I do want to focus on Trocheck in a bit, but one of the other things, and it's been very well told, and part of me is like, I don't think the Rangers are getting enough credit for this. They keep Alex Ovechkin off the score sheet the entire series. It's the first time that it's happened to Alex Ovechkin, I think, in 24 series in his career. I do think the Rangers are getting some credit, but I don't think they're getting enough for keeping him off the score sheet. What was the biggest reason for you in their ability to really keep one of the best goal scorers in the second half of the season completely at bay for 4 games?
Yeah, well, the penalty kill was a big part of that, because we know Ovechkin does a lot of damage there, and the Rangers' penalty kill was just smothering in this series. So I thought they did a really good job of getting their sticks into passing lanes, closing gaps really quickly. Again, the Capitals, from a foot speed perspective, the Rangers aren't necessarily the fastest team in the league, but they looked much faster than the Capitals. I thought they did a really good job of creating some turnovers. I thought their penchant for takeaways in this series was an important part of it as well. We saw Mika Zibanejad pick Ovechkin's pocket in a key situation that led to a goal. I'm misremembering my games now, but either Game 2 or Game 3. I mean, the other thing, though, and Spencer Carberry touched on this after the game, Ovechkin really had to lift. He had a heavy lift for this team coming down the stretch to kind of will their way into the playoffs. And to me, he just looked like he was off in this series. I mean, I don't know if it's age catching up to him. He certainly is not, you know, at his quickest at this stage in his career. He just looked like he was having a hard time getting opening, having a hard time creating enough separation to get those shots off. And so I think the combination of the Rangers defending him really well and the combination of him kind of being a little worn down at this stage after everything that they had to go through to get into the playoffs. Carberry said that he felt like he was worn down. You even saw the usage at the end of the series. They played him under 15 minutes last night in what was a win or go home game for them. And so they didn't seem to be leaning on him super heavy as the series went on. And I think it's because they just felt like he didn't have a whole lot of gas left in the tank.
Yeah, it certainly looked that way. Vince Mercogliano from USA Today and Sportsnet New York joining Matt Marchese here on the Jeff Merrick Show. So you mentioned Igor Shesterkin in your opening answer. Listen, the Rangers are one of the deepest teams in the league. You know that. But there was a level of concern regarding Igor Shesterkin. It was in and around the All-Star break, and Jonathan Quick had made a few starts in a row. And there was some concern, I'm assuming, among Rangers fans about his play. Washington, not an offensive juggernaut, as we know, by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, 1.75 goals against, a .931 save percentage. Has his play in this series made, and even before this series, has it made, given the Rangers fans the ability to sleep well at night, knowing that, you know, he's been the guy over the course of the last few weeks leading into the playoffs and really the last couple of months? Or do they still wait for that one performance that we've seen a couple of times this year that make them shake their heads?
Yeah, no, you know, they definitely were concerned to a degree, because he went into that All-Star break with an .899 save percentage, very uncharacteristic for him. But what I think is a characteristic that we've seen play out in the last few years, that 21-22 season was kind of the outlier. That season he was outstanding from start to finish, won the Vezina Trophy. I think you could have argued for him to be in the Hart Trophy conversation that year. For me, definitely the best goaltending season that I've covered far and away, and a historic season for him. But otherwise, you know, you can go back to last year as well. He tends to go into these slumps at points, and a lot of times it's kind of in the middle of the season. The same exact thing that happened to him last year, where around February, people were starting to vocalize concerns because his play seemed to be slipping, but he always seems to pick things up at the right time. Last year, he finished really strong, and even though the Rangers ended up losing to the Devils in the first round, I thought he was by far their best player in that series. And what we saw post All-Star break this year was him all of a sudden turn it on again. And when he's on, he's arguably the best goalie in the world. And so I think Rangers fans have a lot of confidence that when they need him in these clutch moments, in these big game settings, his playoff track record is for the most part really good. His second half of the season track record for the most part is really good. He seems to know when to turn it on. And what we've seen from him really since the All-Star break this year is that he has been pretty much on point, very consistent for them. And even though he didn't face a heavy shot volume in this series against the Capitals, I don't think he saw more than 29 shots in any of the four games. There were some moments where he had to stand on his head and make a really difficult save, and he seemed to come up with that pretty much every time. So Igor, I think, for most Rangers fans, is probably one of the last guys that they worry about just because his second halves and his playoffs have generally been very good. And again, when he's on top of his game, he's pretty much as good as anybody.
Yeah, he was excellent in this series. I mean, I don't know how he thinks he could play much better than that, but that was pretty darn good. I wanted to ask you this question because it is a genuine curiosity for me, because I look at the Rangers and I don't see a lot of flaws. I see a really balanced team from top to bottom, whether it be the forward group, whether it be the defense group, and the goaltending as well. What is the most underreported or underappreciated part about this Rangers team?
Oh, that's a good question. A couple guys, I would throw a few names out to you. One guy who I thought was outstanding in this series was Keandre Miller. Mm-hmm. And the Rangers made an interesting decision in the last two games of the regular season. I mean, they have basically had the same top four defensemen, the same pairings for 3 or 4 years now. It's been Keandre Miller with Jacob Trouba, and it's been Adam Fox with Ryan Lindgren. Now, the Fox-Lindgren thing has stayed the same. But what we saw during a stretch when Jacob Trouba went out in March for 11 games, they put Keandre Miller with Braden Schneider. And it's definitely benefited Miller because I think he's taken more of an alpha dog kind of role in that pairing. I think it's also benefited Schneider because I think Schneider had been kind of pigeonholed into this bottom pair role for the first three seasons of his career. And I think he was at the point where he needed a challenge. He needed something where he was going to be asked, as he told me the other day, to come out of his comfort zone. And so I think Schneider has really stepped up. But Keandre, to me, and Spencer Carberry pointed this out as well, I mean, he was in the D zone the Rangers' most effective defenseman in the series. The way with that 6'5 reach that he has and the way that he's able to skate, he was just swallowing them up. You know, he was not giving up pretty much anything. And I thought that pairing, the Miller-Schneider pairing, was probably the Rangers' best pair in the series. And Miller is such a critical guy for them because they use him in that shutdown role. And so I think when you're stepping up in competition and you're asking, you know, who's going to go against the best forwards and the opposing team, if it's Carolina next or whoever it is, Miller is going to take a lot of those minutes. And to me, Adam Fox is a perennial Norris Trophy candidate, but Miller is the second most important defenseman on this team. His talent is through the roof as far as the measurables and the physical traits and all that kind of stuff. So for me, I probably didn't get a whole lot of play in this series, but I thought he was really, really good for them, and that's a good omen for them moving forward. And then the other thing is, I think that third line, obviously the top two lines, because they have the star power of Panarin and Kreider and Zibanejad and Trocheck. And again, Zibanejad and Trocheck were really good in this series. But the third line with Will Cooley, Alex Wenberg, and Kaapo Kakko, they didn't get a goal until game four when Kakko scored 57 seconds into the game, but they made a really positive impact. You look at some of the underlying numbers, the shot share was way in the Rangers' advantage when those guys were on the ice. They really seemed to tilt the ice in the Rangers' favor. A really good defensive line, because Wenberg is a good two-way center, Kakko is much improved defensively, and Cooley brings that physical presence. So I thought that third line was important for the Rangers in the series and is going to be really important for them moving forward, because that depth is going to be tested against a team like Carolina, and you're going to need your third line to win a lot of its matchups. And I think that group is starting to show that they're capable of doing that.
I got a couple minutes for this one. We talk about Vincent Trocheck. He played the most He had the most ice time among all Rangers players. That includes defensemen. That includes forwards. He had 6 points. It's hard to imagine, you know, and this is not a conversation we would have had 3 or 4 years ago, but it's hard to imagine where the Rangers would be without the versatility that is Vincent Trocheck and being able to play on the power play, kill penalties, play in defensive situations. Like, the guy does it all for them. And, you know, we don't talk about him as the, you know, one of the two best forwards because of Zibanejad, because of Panarin. But boy, oh boy, it'd be hard to imagine where the Rangers would be without Vincent Trocheck at this point.
Yeah, Matt, Peter Laviolette, I thought, said it best before the series. He said, Trocheck touches every part of our game. And it's true. I mean, you touched on it. Both special teams, first power play unit, one of the first guy over the boards for the PK. He's been really effective on the PK, I think. Faceoffs, Rates is one of the top guys in the league in that category. And that had been an area of weakness for the Rangers for years before he got here. 77 points in the regular season this year, which is a new career high. He has really clicked and gelled on that line with Panarin and Lafreniere, and he does a lot of the dirty work that allows those guys to kind of let their skill shine. A really responsible defensive player, a pretty shifty, kind of sneaky good skater as well, I would say. And I'll tell you this, the Rangers every year at the end of the regular season ask all of the beat reporters to vote for team MVP, and they have us send in a ballot with our top three candidates. Obviously, I think it was unanimous. We all had Artemi Panarin at number one because of the season that he had. But I had Vincent Trocheck as number two. I had him ahead of Igor, who was third on my ballot. I had him ahead of Mika Zibanejad, who is a really important all-around player for the Rangers, but I don't think was quite in top form for a good chunk of this regular season. I had him ahead of Adam Fox. I had him ahead of all these guys, who I think the reputation around the league is probably stronger for a lot of those guys. But Trocheck was the engine for this team this year because he hustles. He does everything so well. He's got plenty of skill. He epitomizes to me when you talk about a 200-foot player. And you saw the impact in this series as well because he had some key goals for them, 3 goals in 4 games, but he also made an impact in pretty much every situation. So a critical, critical player for them, no doubt about it.
He has been absolutely incredible. And again, when you talk about, you know, if you look at the Rangers and the team that they have, there's a few guys that you would get to before Vincent Trocheck for a lot of people, and I think that is absolutely faulty with what he brings to this team. Vince, thanks so much for taking some time for me today. Greatly appreciate it. Have a safe drive home, and I'm sure we'll be chatting with you in the near future as the Rangers continue on this run here. Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, no problem, Matt. Thanks for having me.
There he goes, Vince Mercogliano from USA Today and Sportsnet New York. I mean, Vincent Trocheck, 71.2% in the faceoff circle. That is the most among players that have taken more than, checks notes, 5 faceoffs. Vincent Trocheck, taken a lot more than that. He's been absolutely incredible for the New York Rangers. Tonight, an elimination game. The Tampa Bay Lightning taking on the Florida Panthers. Panthers hosting this one. They look to eliminate the Tampa Bay Lightning in 5 games. You can watch that one on Sportsnet at 7 p.m. Eastern. Also, the Vegas Golden Knights hosting the Dallas Stars. Game 4 there between those two teams. That one in Vegas. You can watch that one 9:30 Eastern on Sportsnet. Thank you to everyone that joined the show today. Elliot Friedman, Dave Randorf, David Amber, and as you just heard, Vince Mercogliano. Thanks to everybody behind the glass. Thanks to Lance. Thanks to Jen. Thanks to Jake. Jeff, hopefully we'll be back tomorrow. Hopefully he's feeling better. Lance is praying for the safety and health of Jeffrey. We'll see what happens. But enjoy the games tonight. I'm sure we'll chat with you tomorrow. Thanks for watching and listening to the Jeff Merrick Show on Sportsnet 360 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.